Good evening. It's Dan in Little Saigon, Seattle. And it is March the 2nd, 2019. Huzzah, hooray. Good news. I didn't really have any particular topic for today. I kind of did a few of these this week. I don't know. Been kind of a crappy mood. But that's not really your problem or your fault. I will say that, and this sort of is related to something I said in a previous podcast, but it does seem like everybody's getting cancer. I don't mean this literally to be the case. I'm not saying everyone is getting cancer. I'm not saying that everyone listening to me has cancer. It's probably more complicated than that, right? But every once in a while, in the last decade, I'll get a call or another call from someone, and I'll just, I don't know, I get this impression that, yeah, everyone is getting cancer. Now, not everyone is dying of cancer, and that's probably a good thing, right? At least not initially. You know, that's one thing I've figured out, anecdotally, about cancer in general, is it seems like if you survive the first cancer and you get into remission, that maybe you're okay, maybe you're fine, but it always seems like that second or third cancer, the one that comes after, that's the one that kills you. My mom and my sister were both breast cancer survivors, and of course, they knew what they knew back then. They didn't know about BRCA2, single nucleotide polymorphism, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot they didn't know. So if they'd known then what they know now, I guess my mom and my sister might still be alive. On the other hand, I really don't know. Yeah, single nucleotide polymorphism, that's something that doesn't roll off the tongue. If you're not an expert in genetics, or DNA, it simply refers to a part of your DNA that exhibits certain behaviors vis-a-vis the rest of the information. They tend to be polymorphic, meaning these SNPs or these sequences tend to exhibit behaviors vis-a-vis the rest of the genome that is differentiating and correlates. I don't know. I mean, beyond that, what I will tell you is people with BRCA2, which is a marker, are folks who are told, you know, you're going to have to undergo some fairly extensive surgery, have all your sexual organs removed, blah, blah, blah. And then you'll never get the other cancers. That is the argument. I don't know. I know that it's a judgment call, and people in my family made decisions afterwards. But again, it just seems like everybody is getting cancer or has cancer or is going to get cancer. It might just be because we're all living longer, but I don't know. I'm not quite 50 yet, and I really will be surprised if I make it to 60. But you never know. I could. You never know. And I know that cancer is a depressing topic, but you're listening to my podcast, so you have only yourself to blame. The other thing that occurred to me, it's not a new thought, but I was thinking about some of the songs, some of the popular songs from the 70s. And there's this one song I'd listened to. It's from a group called Starbuck. I never really heard much from these folks. I mean, I don't know that Starbuck went very far. But they have this one song from the 70s called Moonlight Feels Right. And it fits into the category of creepy. I remember as a kid hearing this song and it sounded creepy to me. And of course, when it came out, when it debuted, it was, what, I was 6 or 7 years old. So really, if it sounded creepy at 6 or 7, it might not have been that creepy to adults. But it had a weird sort of melody that went along with the lyrics. It's like moonlight feels right, like totally like messed up, satanic sounding bullshit. But listen to the first set of lyrics, okay? This is the first set of lyrics, and then think about it. I'm actually gonna speak them. I'm not gonna sing them. The wind blew some luck in my direction. I caught it in my hands today. I finally made a tricky French connection. You winked and gave me your okay. I'll take you on a trip beside the ocean and drop the top at Chesapeake Bay. Ain't nothing like the sky to dose a potion. The moon'll send you on your way. And then it goes, moonlight feels right, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. When I heard the song many years later, like, I mean, many, many years later. And I was thinking about the lyrics, and it occurred to me that this song sounds like a dude who's about ready to kill somebody, specifically a woman. And I know, you'd say, Dan, you're messed up. It's about having sex. He talks about the potion. He talks about how she's feeling. You know, there's stuff in there about a wet kiss and the tide's rising. Come on, Dan. But even the cover, like this one... It must have been the cover for the record, but even the record cover has this creepy looking dude, you know, standing next to this car with some woman inside, and it's kind of like 1920s bullshit. And it just had that feel of, you know, Bluebeard, you know, going to kill some woman situation. I don't know. It's pretty fucked up. But yeah, Moonlight Feels Right by Starbuck. You read the lyrics yourself, you can listen to the song. Yeah, it could be just a dude trying to score in his convertible and probably doing drugs, because it's kind of the message, we'll do some drugs and then we'll have sex. Or it could be, you know, I'm just going to give her some poison or give her a little bit of a roofie. And who knows what I end up doing. It's pretty scary. On the other hand, you could say, Dan, it's pretty scary. That's where your head went. And like I said, it seems like everyone's getting cancer, so it could be brain cancer. I know several years ago, a relative of mine slash friend or friend slash relative was so worried about me not really connecting with reality the way I'm supposed to, that this particular relative suggested I had brain cancer. And, you know, it's possible. It's possible that I do. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't have brain cancer if I do. I just don't really know. Yeah, the other thing, too, is, I don't know. I kind of counted my chickens this week. For those listeners that must know, I guess I'm grotesquely honest about stuff that probably other people feel some type of shame over, but I really don't. Last month, I looked for help, assuming that there was any help for nearly 50-year-old white men with their rent, and there really isn't, other than people that are related. I did get help, but it wasn't from, you know, the government or some charitable organization. I don't know. I'm really the wrong demographic. I don't have kids. So, and that's the other thing too. I'm not saying it's wrong to help people with kids first. I think that's actually the right thing to do. But if you reach this stage of life and you don't have kids, it is fairly obvious that you're kind of in the category of throwaway. I mean, I'm on the verge of becoming more expensive to the healthcare system. I don't generally get sick, but I know that the laws of thermodynamics and human health only point one direction. So yeah, eventually I'm going to start getting all the crappy diseases that are expensive. And from society's perspective, I guess, especially when you consider how cash-strapped human civilization is at this point. I mean, in reality, human civilization, not just America, but all of civilization is broke. And on multiple levels, that's true. But I mean financially broke, in addition to being other types of broken. So in general, I think that, you know, optimally speaking, I would put in another 10 years of work and then, you know, conveniently be dead by 63 or 64. And I know you're saying, Dan, that's really dark. I can't believe you just said that. But I'm not really upset about it. I mean, here's the thing. I know that currently, you know, I have to use a food stamp card, EBT card, to get food. I know I currently go to the food bank. And this brings me to the story. I thought my card was going to renew on the 1st of March. Well, it turns out you get some magical day associated with your name. And so between now and the 20th of March, I'll get more money on that card so I can go buy some food. But on Thursday, I was stupid. I kind of assumed I would get more money on Friday. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to skip the food bank today. You can only go there on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Tuesday was a monkey fuck. It was ridiculous. I got there an hour early and it seemed like they opened an hour late. And for all that waiting, I think I got three or four potatoes and some other crap, but really not much. Not much that was edible, you know. Although, here's the thing about eating. You'll eat just about anything if you have to. That's one of the things you learn in life, you know. It is really just a question of hunger. And I'm not in any danger of withering away. I mean, truly, I could lose another 40 or 50 pounds before I was in any real danger of dying of starvation. Although you really shouldn't just stop eating, of course. You know, that's not very healthy. But if you have to go a week or two here and there without eating that much, it's actually probably good for you. So think of it as fasting enforced by reality. That's one way of looking at it. I call it the Venezuela diet plan. And it works. It does work. Mostly depends upon not being able to afford food that's very tasty. So not only do you not eat very much because there's not a lot to eat, but you really don't want to eat it. I mean, it's just very bland food when you can't afford to eat. And that's okay because, as I've stated before, there's different types of poverty. There's different types of situations like this. I'm describing kind of white middle class dropping off the social, you know, radar, nearing the age of 50 and no real money and totally broke poverty. That's one kind of being poor. And as annoying as that is, and as likely as it is and probably ending up at homelessness, it's still not the worst in the world. Because even being homeless in America is in some ways a step up, right? It's kind of like, you know, I go to the food bank and it's, and I'm just being honest, it's mostly Chinese immigrants, and that's okay. I live in the International District. It doesn't surprise me that there are a lot of poor people from China in the International District. I don't really care if they have any more money than I do. The fact is that they're there in line. They're there because they need food. And I'm not going to judge that, you know. But yeah, if I were in Beijing, like imagine if the tables were turned and I was in Beijing and I could not speak English, how long would I live? I mean, how long would I live in Beijing? This is one of those questions, especially if you're one of these folks that thinks the issue of immigration has nice little politically correct feel-good answers. And I know the answer because I stood in line with a lot of people that were not in Beijing and probably happy because of that. I do that every Tuesday and Thursday. If you want to join me, it's at the Seattle Indian Center from, you know, 1:30 until I think 3:30. But if you want to get any food that, well, isn't total shit, you probably want to get there by 12:30. But the question is, if I were in Beijing, China, would I remotely, even plausibly, have any chance at survival? Would there be any place I could go to get a free meal? You see, I've never been to Beijing. I've never been to China. But based upon spending a year in Korea, I think I know the answer. And oh, by the way, it was South Korea, okay? The quote-unquote good Korea. The answer is simple. Being poor pretty much everywhere else. And being poor and an immigrant pretty much everywhere else on Earth is pretty terrible, with few exceptions. I mean, I don't really know if the enclaving in Europe helps people who are Muslim. It probably does from a cultural perspective, but economically it might be a big negative. I truly don't know. So it's possible that there are enclaves of people, you know, in various cultures around the world who kind of figure out a way to live other places and there aren't any problems. But I gotta tell you, if I were a betting guy and I said, take Dan as is, you know, his one quarter of Chinese, he can say ni hao, he can ask you how your brother's feeling in really bad Chinese, take him and put him in Beijing and see what would happen. It's possible that someone is kind to me. It's possible that I get a job and I work my way up. There are a number of things in this world that are possible, but they're not very likely. It's also possible that somebody tests me and figures out that my organs are in good shape and that there's a, you know, upper-level communist party leader that needs a lung transplant or a kidney or a liver, and they figure out that mine aren't too bad. Not as inundated with mercury or lead or other carcinogens from the way in which China has industrialized in the last 30 years, 40 years. So yeah, if I were a wagering person, I would say that no, there will be nothing like what is at the Seattle Indian Center. And I'm not saying it's a very good food bank, but the people there are nice enough. It is far more likely that I would be dead within a week. Now, does that mean Americans are good people and Chinese people are bad people? It doesn't necessarily mean that either. What I will tell you is a lot of people in this country really do take for granted the level of wealth that we have even now, even with all the debt and all of the financial bullshit and chicanery. America is still a very wealthy place relative to the rest of the world. And if you see it in those terms, then I think it can give you some balance, some perspective. You know, it kind of explains why people are willing to risk it all to head to the United States, legally or illegally. Because as crappy as this country is becoming, and compared to when I was a kid, yeah, it's becoming crappier every fucking day, it's still one of the least crappy places on Earth. Now, some people are heartened by that, which means they feel better. They say, okay, that sounds pretty good, Dan. You just told me that we're still the greatest country on Earth. And if you listen to what I said, that's not exactly what I said. I said in economic terms, you're still better off than most of the planet. But the chart, the arrow's going down, buddy. It's not going up. I think that they lie about the numbers a lot. They do. I really do think that's true. But what are the real numbers? It's like cancer. Anecdotally, it seems like in the last decade, cancer has gone crazy, especially in places like Seattle, where you'd say to yourself, well, don't they have all the fresh water and the clean air and all of the fucking environmental bullshit right there in nice old Seattle? What could possibly cause a spike in cancer? And of course, if you check out the official journals and all the official data, and I say that, you know, with both sarcastic quote hand signs made, it'll all show things are perfectly normal. It's normal, Dan. And any cancer we're seeing is a result of people living longer, Dan. And yet, I gotta tell you, you know, it doesn't seem like that's true. I'm hearing more and more about folks, human beings, in their 30s and 40s dying of cancer. My sister was 43. She died of cancer. And so, yeah, it does seem like, but yeah, we're told that everything's great and everything's fine. And I would say, relative to parts of the world where rivers catch fire because they're so filled with toxic bullshit and they fill with, you know, they fill with chemical foam and shit because they're that gross. Yeah, relative to the nastiest places on Earth, It's true. We're still doing really great here in the United States of America, but I don't know if that's the math we should be doing. I really don't. And I would even go further and say, I don't think there's a solution to this problem. I mean, I do believe there's a basic solution, but I don't believe anybody wants to hear it. The simplest solution to every human problem, in my opinion, is a truly free market. Okay? It doesn't mean central bank controlled. It doesn't mean centrally planned. It doesn't mean that your shitty algorithm tells you there can only be 20 million fucking crap coins. That's not free enterprise. And if you try to shove that shit down people's throats, they can kind of notice that and they get a gag reflex. Okay? I'm talking about actual free enterprise, which means very little, if any, government at all. Very little, if any, of these super mega corporations, which really would only exist and only exist because of government, if we're honest about it. You take away government, these corporations, they may not go away peacefully and they may not go away without a lot of pain, but they simply go away. That's my opinion, okay? More control, more manipulation, more monitoring, less freedom. This is a formula for extinction. If we as a human race want to die, like if it's our choice to collectively commit suicide, and there are days when I wake up and I think, you know what? A lot of people have given into that death instinct, that good old Thanatos have given into it, and maybe that's the deal. Maybe people just want to die. But if we want a chance at living, the only chance we have, it isn't optional, it isn't a luxury, it is quite necessary, absolutely necessary for human survival. The only chance we have is through freedom. That's it. Okay? No bullshit, no isms, no none of that crap. If we can live in a free society, we have a chance. If we continue down the road we seem to be on, and we are on this road, if you ask my opinion, of control and manipulation and reducing human beings to robots, which means the robot apocalypse arrived and went, and you didn't notice. Okay, people you know, people you think you know, you used to know, they're not all together there any longer, and what's replaced them is an app from their phone. But like I said, I'm the guy that listens to a soft rock song from 1976 and sees a dark agenda of murder. I mean, come on. Moonlight feels right. How could that have anything bad in it? Okay. You know, dropping the top at the Chesapeake Bay. He's dropping the top on his convertible. He wants to take a trip beside the ocean. He wants to give you a dose of a little potion and the moon will send you on your way. Moonlight feels right. Repeat that twice. Really creepy music. Yeah, that sounds really lovely. And I suppose if you're, I don't know what they were doing in 76. Maybe they were doing lots of quaaludes. I don't know. But everybody's got cancer. The other thing is this, I've got a bit of the cargo profit thing going on. I'm not a big fan of cargo profits. If you don't know what a cargo profit is, a cargo profit relates to a anthropological phenomena, a phenomena of anthropology, modern cultural anthropology, that dates, I believe, mainly to World War II, but it may be a phenomena that existed for a while amongst peoples that have come in contact with quote unquote the modern world. And the idea of a cargo prophet is simple. A cargo prophet is someone who knows the deal, who knows when the ships will arrive with all their fancy bells and whistles and beads and blankets, but then pretends to the tribe, the local tribe of some South Pacific island, that they have, some supernatural ability to predict when these ships arrive with all their beads and all their blankets and all their nice stuff, right? And hence the word prophet, a prophet, someone who, prophesizes about the future, a cargo prophet. Well, I'm depending upon my IRS refund this year. And I got to tell you straight up, based upon reading the document as much as I could, as much as I could stomach, there's always a chance that they say no. There's lots of reasons why that could happen. So I am very much depending upon money to arrive from the government that ultimately they stole from me throughout the year. And it's depressing because there's this part of me that says, you know, even if it does arrive, isn't that part of the thing that horrifies you about existence? Like this dependency on this institution that is really just a monster for the most part and causes tremendous damage. And even if they give me back some of the money that they took, that they stole, they're still keeping a lot of money for themselves. And some of this money is purportedly for things like, I don't know, Social Security, right? Well, that seems to me to be bullshit at this point. I don't use the healthcare system, so whatever Medicare, Medicaid, that's bullshit too. So Medicare is bullshit. Social Security is bullshit. Even the unemployment stuff is bullshit, especially in my case. It's not something I've only ever been able to use unemployment once, and that was after 9/11, specifically, you know, being involved in layoffs from the aerospace industry. Yeah, that was the one time. But every other time it's been, you know, it's pretty much, hey, did you get fired? No, I did not get fired. I'm simply out of work. Well, okay, you don't get unemployment. And I get it. And I know that you can say, well, the employer pays that, and well, that seems like bullshit too. Because ultimately, you know, you as an employee are paying for that also. But let's just talk about Social Security and Medicare. That shit gets taken out. That's total bullshit. Yeah, I guess I'm in a pretty good mood. But no, I am depending upon a thief giving me money back. It's horrific. And I'm also depending upon the thief giving me the money back in a timely fashion, which really means in the next 10 to 14 days, because after that, I'm kind of back in the boat again of not having a place to live. And yeah, I'm still looking for work, and I still get calls, and there's still a chance, I suppose, I'll figure something out. But there are days, I gotta tell you, there are days, especially in the last month or two, where I just wonder, how much of this do I have left? How much of this bullshit could there be left? I mean, it's not like I'm deserving of any special personal miracle. It's not like I believe that these types of things happen to ordinary people, good things. I see a lot of bad shit happening to people. I see a lot of disaster. I tell you, I get lots of calls. Like I said, you know, I get lots of calls about tragedies to include cancer. I don't really get calls these days about anything that good. You know, for the most part, if something is good, like if I do get a good news call, it's kind of bittersweet, or it's saccharine, or it's just a little off. It's not quite good. It's not quite terrible. And because it's not quite terrible, I treat it as good news. But is it really good news? I mean, somebody I care about who'd been looking for work got a job working in Child Protective Services. And this is a good person with a good heart. And so I knew almost immediately that this is the kind of job that could tear that person up. If you actually gave a shit about children, working in CPS could be like going to hell. But it was a job. So like, what do you say? Oh, well, you know, I think that job's going to burn you out on the inside. But on the other hand, at least you're making money. No, you focus on the positive. You focus on the fact that it's money, that it's a way to make some money for a person's family. But that's the quote unquote good news that I hear these days. You know, good news about some niece or nephew, you know, that might be looking to go into the military. I don't know. Is that good news? It sounds like what you have to do if you have to do it. If there were lots and lots of great jobs for young people, I don't think a person would spend a lot of time thinking about going into the military. No offense to people who go into the military. I went into the military. I'll tell you, one reason I went in was because it was a fucking job. It might not have been a very good job, and in retrospect, it was the wrong job. But part of the reason was it's a fucking job. I don't know, man. I was wondering if I should do this podcast because I'm in such a really shitty place right now. And every once in a while, I'll do a podcast and I'll say, I gotta delete this because this is just too much negative bullshit. But I don't know what to tell you. You want me to tell you that everything's great? Everything is not great. It's also not totally shitty. Things are not perfectly wonderful, but they could be worse. And what's really funny about this whole thing is that you'd think I would be really depressed right now. But part of but what's funny is I'm actually not that depressed. In fact, in some ways, it's just the opposite. If it weren't for the money issue, which is, an issue, right? Because you got to pay for rent and food and whatnot. If it weren't for the money issue, if it weren't for the sense in my heart that whatever happens next with my career, it's kind of all downhill with very few exceptions. And I don't know if I want to go into that right now, but it's sort of that basic question about the future of technology. So, yeah, the way I look at things right now, if I had the money, I'd actually probably be in a really good mood. It's just that I'm not, independently wealthy. I'm not rich. I know there are people in the world today who could take off the rest of their lives and not work and probably live in a cabin someplace because that's the amount of money they have. And maybe they have that money because they worked hard. Maybe they have that money because their parents worked hard. Or maybe they have that money because it's simply stolen fucking money. And with all due respect to all you hardworking slaves out there, a lot of those who become rich at this point are becoming rich because it really is stolen money. It's stolen work. I mean, I know you don't want to believe this or think about it, but every time the Federal Reserve or any bank magics money into existence, that money is coming from somewhere. And if the official numbers on productivity are shit, what do you think the real numbers are? So if we have this economy that on a per capita basis is no longer really producing much, where the average annual GDP since the quote unquote Great Recession ended is barely 1.5%, okay, if you smear it out, if you balance it out. Yeah, every once in a while under Obama, we had a quarter or two where it was above 2% and then gets revised lower or higher. But these averages count, okay? I think 20, I want to say in 2006 or 2007, the GDP of the US was 14 trillion. Today, I think it's 19. So, in the space of a decade, we added 5 trillion in GDP capacity, if you believe the numbers. Well, that's not that impressive, folks. It really isn't. On a percentage basis, that's actually kind of shitty to add that much GDP. But if you actually factor in all the dollars that were printed by the Fed, all of the central banks, if you add in all of our debt, which is now, over 20 trillion federal debt, which doesn't inc it does not include unfunded liabilities. If you include all of the liabilities, that number is in the hundreds of trillions, okay? Yeah, that 5 trillion for all the fucking money we spent and burnt, that's not very much, folks. So yeah, I don't know what to say to people. If you want me to tell you, I think, what do you want me to tell you? That I really see this, huge period of success for me personally? Forget me. Let's assume you're a computer programmer. I know you call yourself a software developer, app developer, software engineer, SDE. I don't give a fuck what weird alphabet soup bullshit you call yourself. You are a computer programmer. And if you were programming Java in the late 90s in a semi-competent way, somewhere in the Seattle area, you could have easily been making $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year at least. And that was late 90s dollars, not dollars 20 years later, okay? No offense to all the people who say there's no inflation, but we know that's bullshit too, don't we? So back then you were doing pretty well. You could have found yourself a home in King County and bought yourself a place for probably pretty close to 100K or less, you know, maybe 70K. A place that would be priced at 5 to 10 times more today, you could have bought back in 98 or 99, probably for $65,000 or $70,000. And you were making about that much per year or more as a Java computer programmer. Those were good fucking times, dude. I hate to break it to you, but things have not gotten better since then. And while it's true there are unicorn jobs, I know the recruiters talk about the unicorn jobs, the jobs where they're going to pay you $150. Oh, Dan, we can't put you in at, you know, $45 an hour. You won't get it. We have to put you in at $70 an hour. Yeah, what a load of horse shit. It's a load of horse shit mainly because there's at least, for me, there's at least 10 other Chinese citizens or Indians on H-1B who will do it for $45 an hour or less. So there is the bullshit. They'll tell you the bullshit story about how there's these people in King County making lots of money. And there are a couple of them. There are a few. But underneath them are lots and lots of everyday computer programmers who are frankly doing worse today than they were 20 years ago in terms of real dollars. And if you believe the bullshit, and this is kind of the fucking punchline right in the fucking kisser, if you believe the bullshit, we are so advanced, computer technology is moving so quickly, machine intelligence and artificial intelligence are so far ahead that within a decade, you know, computers will be writing most of the computer programs. So this whole point of having a person writing programs could be moot in 10 years. So let's pretend you're fucking me. And I don't mean you're fucking me. If you were Scarlett Johansson and you were fucking me, that'd be great, but you're not. But let's say you are me for a second, and you're almost 50 years old, and your best case scenario is 10 years from now, pretty much everyone's going to be replaced, period, because AI will move that quickly. I mean, if energy's not an issue, like let's say you believe the fracking oil miracle, and you think the tar sands in Canada are infinite, and you're not at all worried about all the weather bullshit. You think it's all just random bullshit, and the government's telling you the fucking truth. If you believe the techno-utopian nonsense, within 10 years, most of the computer programming will be done by computers. It, you know, a combination of smarter, you know, IDEs, development environments, and just simply smarter machines and smarter algorithms and smarter programs. Computer programs will write computer programs if you believe the techno-utopian bullshit. But if you don't believe it, if you think it might be mostly bullshit that keeps people going to work every day, or if there is some super technology, it's not for people like us. It's for, you know, special people who live in special places, not people like us here in Little Saigon. In either case, the future looks terrible. There is no future, is my point. I can't think of a future where I'm going to be making a living writing computer programs 10 years from now. So this whole issue of not being able to do this job, it's really just a question of timing. That's all it is. It's a question of when. Is it possible they're going to need computer programmers in 10 years? It's possible. But the circumstances under which that would be true are really rather strange and exotic. Is it possible that we're being lied to about all of the artificial intelligence nonsense? It's possible. In fact, given the history of telling the truth about technology, I would even say it's likely. But likely in what sense? Is it likely that they're overselling or underselling? Is it likely the technology will be better or won't be nearly as advanced? You know? A lot of people will say, well, look at computer technology and look at where it's gone, and no one could have seen that coming. I don't think that's entirely true. I think a lot of science fiction saw exactly where computers were going a very long time ago. at least 50, 60 years ago. So this argument that somehow we didn't know where things were going, I think is kind of ridiculous. I think we knew. I think we also didn't want to know. I think that there were a lot of fantasies about technology that made us feel better, as fantasies do and should, right? You know, dreams of the possible future. So here's the deal. I don't know if artificial intelligence in 10 years is going to replace my job. I also don't know that that makes me any different than any other person that's ever been born. I would add one exception potentially, and that is the following. If you lived in the 19th century and you needed to go work the job at the factory, you really did not need a college degree, let alone three, or many years of experience doing the stuff I've been doing. You didn't need that. You could have just gone to the fucking factory and started out at the bottom, and by the end of 2 or 3 years, you might have been the guy pulling the fucking lever. But the bottom line is this. You didn't need any kind of advanced training to work in a factory in the 19th century, or even the 20th century, for the most part, right? So while it's the case that I'm staring at the same type of obsolescence, really, to become obsolete, the difference is this, is that I, like a lot of other people, put a huge investment in a field of study where it just seems pointless now. And what makes it even worse is that, and it is really worse because of how ridiculous it is, but every 2 weeks, there is a soup du jour, a flavor of the day or week when it comes to software engineering. And if you don't know the latest acronym, well, gee, what's wrong with you? So you're fed this bullshit that, well, you just need to be constantly retraining. Now, it seems like, to me, a treadmill going to nowhere is what it seems like. For all the retraining and all the new technology, and you go work in a cloud job. Once you get a cloud job, you can work with the cloud. Yeah, I gotta say, it all smells and looks a lot like what Uber and Lyft look like. And I know I'm gonna do a bit of a segue here, but here's the thing about Uber and Lyft. If you were oblivious to data mining and machine intelligence, you would have looked at Uber and Lyft and said, okay, this is interesting, this whole gig economy. But when I first saw it, I said, I know what this is, okay? This is the answer to the first DARPA race. I don't know how much you know about the DARPA races. I think there may have been more than two, but what's really interesting about one of the first, and I think it may have been the first DARPA race, is almost no vehicle made it very far. Okay, these were driverless vehicles. I want to say this was 2003 or early 2000s. But the point is, the first race, I think almost none of the vehicles finished, I don't think. And a lot of them ended up, of the 200-mile race or however far it was, a lot of them ended up just sort of on their sides, rolled over, you know, barely a mile out. And there are lots of reasons why. One potential reason is that a lot of folks were trying to go for the hard solution first, which is the, you know, stereoscopic vision, visual pattern recognition, seeing your environment the way a human does, and do the hard solution first. I don't believe that explains all of them, but it does explain a lot of the reasons why these vehicles didn't do so well as driverless vehicles. And then you get to the second race, and the second race is almost just the opposite. Almost every vehicle finishes, and some of them really do quite well. Now, of course, there's more laser scanners, more EMF scanners, more essentially of the technology that allows, you know, modern smart weapons to work. And the whole stereoscopic vision thing, well, yeah, some of that was still there, but more as a secondary thing. Whereas, you know, the laser scanner was more powerful and useful than, you know, a couple of make-believe robotic eyes. And here's the thing, Uber and Lyft can be seen as the gig economy if these companies were making money, but they're really not making any money to speak of. But if you see them from the perspective of data mining, they're actually kind of brilliant. What you've done is you've convinced huge cross-sections of people to actually go into debt in a lot of cases, to actually take out car loans, you know, and just to basically get by. And yeah, they're making some money, but what they're doing for you is giving you essentially machine intelligence gold. You get to data mine all of these drivers. You get to look at all their behaviors. You get to correlate this to time of day. You get to correlate this to smart traffic reporting, to GPS. You end up with this huge database. And it isn't just a database of driving, it's a database of stimulus response. It's a database that shows, monetary information as positive feedback behaviors. So ultimately, you end up with a huge training set for any AI that you would use to essentially have a driverless vehicle, a driverless car. That's what Uber and Lyft really are. Uber and Lyft have nothing to do with the gig economy. And again, if the AI stuff is not total bullshit, the answer to this is going to come very quickly in the next 5 years. But if Uber and Lyft still exist in 5 to 10 years, I doubt there's going to be anybody in any of those vehicles. I seriously doubt people will be doing Uber or Lyft 5 to 10 years from now, assuming the artificial intelligence story is true. Again, I don't know for a fact. The world I currently inhabit is a very small world indeed, and it's based upon those sources of information I have access to, which may not be that much better than the sources you have. But I pretty much could tell almost from the beginning that Uber and Lyft were bullshit. At least in terms of their public, their public persona, their superficial reality, the gig economy. No, Uber and Lyft are a brilliant way of data mining people to teach cars, to teach computers how to drive cars. Ultimately, that's what we're talking about. Data mining a lot of people, a lot of human behavior to teach a computer how to drive a car. That's what Uber and Lyft are. Now, maybe you're making money off of it right now and you're saying, "Well, Dan, I don't care. At least I'm making money." And I gotta say, listen, if it's a way for you to make money, who am I to fucking judge? But it's one of those situations where you have to ask yourself 10 years from now, if you have essentially, if you do achieve your artificial intelligence paradise of almost everything being done by computers, and maybe it's 20 years from now, but I don't know. If you think about the pace of technology, 10 years could be as accurate as 20. So yeah, 10 years from now, we'll have driverless cars, okay? But who's going to pay to ride in these cars? That's a good question. I don't really know the answer to that question. We're going to have all of this machine intelligence to replace human intelligence. Okay, what are people going to do? And that's one of those debates in economics today. Like, well, maybe we're going to have to pay people to do nothing. I don't know, folks. The history of paying people to do nothing is a very short and limited history, and it barely exists, and it probably is never going to happen. Okay? I hate to be the one to break the bad news, but Marxism is not real, and neither is Santa Claus. These things are bullshit. Communism is bullshit. You're not going to get paid to do nothing. So the question is, what do you do with all the fucking people in 10 or 20 years? If you believe the techno-utopian garbage, what are you going to do? If it only takes 2 people out of 10 to make your society work, and those 2 people don't have to work that hard, what are you going to do with the other 8? I'm sorry, but I have a hard time believing that the history of humanity has so radically changed that the other 8 will be treated well. No, that's not really the history of humanity up to this point. The history of humanity up to this point, when it comes to the other 8, is the other 8 are basically told to fuck off and die. And sometimes that's really brutal death. Or sometimes it's like a slow motion train wreck, like, I don't know, cancer. I mean, again, I don't know. What am I supposed to tell you? If I had money right now, if I had cash, if I had enough money to survive, that's exactly what I would be doing. I wouldn't be saying to myself, well, holy shit, how do I put money away for this amazing future? Because the future, it may look amazing to some techno freaks, but to me, currently, it looks like a bunch of different options some of them more terrible than others. You know, if I'm to believe the techno-utopian garbage, then the future looks a lot like THX 1138. It looks a lot like a human being being slowly turned into a robot, and life becomes bland and pointless. And you know, let's say that there's no more illness and no more poverty. Well, okay, what are we going to be doing with our days? On the other hand, if all of this techno-utopia stuff is just garbage, if it's wishful thinking, you know, and there have been many people who proposed that, that it's really just wishful thinking and magical thinking and not based in reality at all, then 10 or 15 years from now, we could be mainly worried about, you know, the bottom part of Maslow's hierarchy, which, you know, again, is related in a sense. But yeah, food, water, shelter, that could be our principal concern in 10 or 15 years. And what's funny is whether it's the utopian techno future or the we don't have enough stuff to get by future, both of those futures look kind of crappy. And if it's this one, this future, this present that just keeps being repeated, you know, like some fucking record that keeps skipping over and over again. Well, okay, that's fine, but do we really want to be living like this in 10 or 20 years, this kind of like drab waiting room? I mean, this is, you know, in some ways, recent history has felt like this, and maybe I'll end it this way. This has been a really negative podcast in so many ways, but in some ways, the history of America, especially since the end of the last century, but let's say since, you know, in the last 20 years, it seems like the recent history of America, the last 20 years, is like being in the worst waiting room of the worst dental office ever. Like, if you can imagine the worst waiting room with the worst music, magazines that are decades out of date, some really crappy music playing, like I said, just Muzak of shitty songs. So if you know, Muzak is kind of shitty, and so it's the instrumental Muzak of really shitty songs, in a really shitty waiting room at the worst possible dental office ever. This is how things feel right now. It's like, I don't know what's coming next, but this waiting around bullshit kind of sucks. And that's kind of where I feel history is right now. It almost feels stuck. Maybe even constipated. Maybe constipated is the right term to apply to history at this point. But yeah, the shittiest fucking waiting room, with the rattiest furniture, with the nastiest smells, with the worst Muzak playing in the worst dental office in the universe. That's how history has felt since, you know, really the last 20 years. And on that note, I hope you guys have a great Saturday night. I hope you have good plans. You know, if you have a cat, pet your cat. If you have a dog, and it's not a French bulldog, count yourself lucky. And good night.